Okay, our next speaker is Jay McKnight. He received a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering from Stanford in 1952 and worked for Ampex Corporation from 1952 to 1972. At Ampex, he served in the Magnetic Recording Research Group, the Stereo Tape Division, and the Professional Audio Division. He's published over 60 technical papers, mostly in the Journal of the Audio Engineering Society. He received the Society's Publication Award in 1982. He's a co-founder of Magnetic Reference Laboratory in Mountain View, California, where he's been the president since 1975. In 1973 and 74, he was a member of Judge Sirica's advisory panel on the White House tapes. You may remember Watergate, or at least some of you might. Mr. McKnight is also a fellow of the AES in 1960, received the AES Award in 71, and was president of the Society for the years 78-79, and made an honorary member in 1979. And I could go on with another list of awards, but I think we want to get to his paper. Yeah. So with great pleasure, Jay McKnight.
Okay, I wasn't listening. Did you say this is going to be standard alignment tapes, history at Ampex? Ampex announced the Model 200A tape recorder, as we've heard, in 1947, October. It was the first USA-made professional audio tape recorder with the quality and durability needed for broadcasting and sound recording studio operation. It was first used, as we've heard, for recording, editing, and playing the Bing Crosby radio show, and also for time-delaying radio broadcasts by the networks across the United States. For such professional applications, the designing engineers realized that the recorder and reproducers and the recordings made on these machines needed to be the highest quality and also needed to be interchangeable, meaning consistent equalization, azimuth, and recorded level. The Model 200A manual says, using the best possible input and monitoring equipment, recordings cannot be distinguished from original program material when directly compared. We've heard that before and since. But let's jump back a little. The Ampex engineers had previously built and used disc recording phonograph equipment, recording and reproducing systems, so they knew that technology. The earliest sound recording that we would consider to be high fidelity was the electromechanical phonograph disc recording system developed by Bell Telephone Labs in the 1920s. Those engineers realized that one requirement for a high fidelity system was interchangeability of recorders, disc records, and reproducers. In order to achieve this, they defined a quantity for the recorded signal, which is the recorded groove velocity. And you guys who do disc recordings know all about that. And they developed means for measuring this. Then they developed test recordings that contained standard levels and frequency responses. Thus, to standardize a recording and reproducing system, you would play a test record, adjust your reproducer to give the standard output voltage and flat frequency response. Then you adjust your recording system to again give the standard output voltage and flat frequency response. Now you can record audio programs that conform to a standard and can be played back on any machine. The situation with the tape recorder is exactly the same. In the Ampex 200A manual we find, each machine is checked to match a standard tape to ensure that recordings will be interchangeable among machines. At first, the engineers set up one recorder to record the optimum frequency response and level and made a single standard alignment tape with tones to set the subsequent production machines and then the production reproducers and then the recorders to that. But having only one recording in the house puts all your standardizing eggs in one basket. That's a bad idea since tapes are easily erased. The Model 200A manual mentions a standard tape with 18 tones across the audio band for setting up the azimuth, gain and frequency response of the reproducer, and there were taps to identify the frequencies. 3 kilohertz, tap, 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 no voice. The exact history is not quite clear, but Ampex engineer Frank Linner recorded a master standard tape and set up a pair of Model 200A recorders for copying them. And Alex Poniatoff hired a bright high school, a bright high schooler, it was a Ray Dolby, to run off a bunch of copies. Ray's memory is that this was in 1949, June. It's unclear whether these tapes were given or sold to Model 200A owners, but the Model 200A manual, dated 1948, July, describes adjusting the reproducer from a standard tape and assumes its availability. For various good reasons, the level and equalization standards used for the Model 200A were not further used on the Model 300. But that doesn't seem to matter much because few, if any, original 200A tapes survive, because the idea of a reusable recording medium meant that very little was preserved of the programs broadcast in 1948. That Model 200A equalization and level were rather arbitrarily arrived at, which has certain disadvantages. First, there's no way to write a specification and standard for your recorded tapes or for the recorder. Second, if your standard tape becomes erased, there's no way to go back and reconstruct it. To do that, you need to have some fundamental physical measurements. In 1948 May, Ampex had developed the Model 300. Frank Leonard developed a simplified equalization for Ampex that later became the NAB standard equalizations for both 7.5 and 15 inches per second. And these are still used in the United States. In 1949, Frank Leonard published a comparison between the equalizations used on several professional recorders at 15 inches per second. By 1950, magnetic tape recording was widely used around the world, and the International Radio Consultative Committee, which is known by its French initials, CCIR, was studying the means for standardizing the frequency response of the reproducers by fundamental methods, with participation by several European countries. They published a number of reports that were summarized in a 1952 AES convention paper by Bick of RCA, and that was subsequently published in the AES Journal in 1953. A little clarification here on naming the quantity recorded on magnetic tape. In the original CCIR reports, they called it surface induction. Induction is an alternate name for magnetic flux density. And Bick titled his paper, Methods of Measuring Surface Induction of Magnetic Tape. Bick soon found out that the recorded quantity actually is best expressed as flux rather than flux density. And he published a little-known errata in the AES Journal in 1954, saying that this error, that is, the use of the name surface induction instead of flux, had been incorporated into CCIR and NAB standards and will be corrected in the near future. Unfortunately, it was not corrected for many years, and we still get occasional inquiries, why does MRL stay flux? Isn't it flux density? And the answer is no, it really is just plain flux. Leonard of Ampex gave a technical paper explaining the equalizations and the basis for them in an IRE convention, at an IRE convention in 1952, and published it in an IRE transactions in the next year. These measurements were used by Ampex to calibrate the reproducers used to make the Ampex standard alignment tapes. Making standard alignment tapes by copying a master tape has several drawbacks. First, whatever level dropouts there are in the master are copied, making the copy level less stable. Second, any frequency response errors on the master are copied. And third, a tape that's repeatedly used for making copies may suffer partial erasure, introducing an error in the master that also gets copied. It's therefore much better to record the tones of the standard alignment tapes directly from an oscillator and re-record only the voice announcements from another tape. Around 1949, Ampex developed such a system for making standard alignment tapes. It had a voice announcement that was played from one tape recorder with the tones from a multi-frequency oscillator and an operator switching between the voice and the tones and trimming the recorded level manually for variations in tape sensitivity. This is shown in an AES paper in 1958 by Frank Richards. He describes the manufacturing process. The voice instructions on the standard tape are reproduced from another machine, and since all standard tapes are recorded in reverse, to eliminate the necessity for rewinding, the voice is reproduced backwards from one track of a two-channel machine. The other track carries cue tones to guide the operator, who incidentally is a laboratory engineer devoting full time to the production of these tapes. Surveillance of each tape is maintained as it's being recorded. In other words, the operator watches a meter. And any tape showing deviations from accepted standards is immediately discarded. Tolerances of 2/3 minute for azimuth setting and 1/4 dBm level are maintained. A comment here, we at MRL think that recording the standard tapes backwards as Ampex did was not such a good idea, actually. First, any level corrections that occur on the tones occur just near the end of the tone. But when you're adjusting the responsive reproducer, you're probably making the last fine adjustments at the end when the recorded level is moving around. Better to record in the normal play direction so the corrections are made at the beginning of the tone and the end is steady. Second, when the recording is heads out and you play the tape, you have to fast rewind it after you've used it for storing it. Fast rewind is not so good for storage as normal play wind. It's better to store the tape played than fast rewind it before you use it, where it will not be stored and will be freed up. Third, but engineers who are used to heads out are confused by the MRL tails out tapes. Sorry. You can't have it both ways. Now, from Frank Richards' paper, this is a photograph of the transport that Ampex used for many, many years for making their test tapes. It's a garden variety model 300, says standard tape on the front. You can see they were recorded onto small reels from a large reel. Otherwise, it's pretty garden variety. They did modify the head assembly. The playback head assembly had here's the regular playback head assembly and the tape coming across, and they put a plate on top and a knob here, so you had some calibration on the azimuth, which is a handy thing to have. And the third figure, this is the tone generator they used. It was one generator inside, one electronic set, actually lifted from a Hewlett-Packard Model 200 oscillator, but with a whole bunch of different frequency settings switched with the knob, and a level control for trimming the level for tape variations around here. And one of these switches switched between voice and toner. I don't know which one. There's some switches here, and some switches here, and a gain control here. So that was a scheme used for many years for manually making the standard alignment tapes. It was used from 1950 roughly till the 1980s. Continuing, one thing that this paper And the AES Journal said absolutely nothing about was how they did the fundamental calibrations. Basically, the tapes were, the machines were set up by playing a lab standard test tape and adjusting the level controls and equalizers to get flat output, and then making more tapes like that. Continuing research at Ampex improved the understanding and practices for the standardization of the tape flux, the recorded level, if you will, the flux versus frequency, the equalization, and the azimuth. And there are a number of published papers by myself and Bob Morrison in the AES Journal that detail how the calibrations are done. So now we have fundamental calibrations for the level and the equalization that you can go back to. You can write a paper standard. If something happens to the lab samples, you can go back and do a fundamental measurement. Morrison left, Morrison left Ampex to found the competing Standard Tape Laboratory in 1968, and they stayed in that business till 1990. Tony Bardakis and I left Ampex to found Magnetic Reference Laboratory in 1972, and we are the only surviving maker of test tapes, as far as I know. The MRL system that we developed in the 80s is automated and now has the voice on a hard disk recording instead of a tape recorder, a computer-controlled switching of voice and tone, which allows us to make special tapes. Somebody says, well, I want more tones, I want longer tones, I want shorter tones, I want different levels. It's a small matter of programming now. And the system has an automatic gain control instead of an operator sitting there running a pot to make up for tape variations. The Ampex standard tapes had essentially one program for tones and level, but we find considerable demand for calibration tapes having more or less tones, more or less durations, and so forth. In 1975, the International Electrotechnical Commission, IEC, who does the international sound recording standards, issued publication 94-2, later called 600-94-2. Magnetic Tape Recording and Reproducing Systems, Part 2, Calibration Tapes, which gives specifications for standard calibration tapes, frequencies, levels, and tolerances. We at MRL have adopted the IEC name calibration tapes, although many people still call them standard alignment tapes. A last comment, people often ask us, who are the voices on the standard alignment tapes? I don't have exact dates, but here are names and approximate times. Around 1948, according to the Model 200A manual, there were taps, not voices, to identify the tone frequencies. Around 1948 or 1949, Frank Leonard, an engineer and the manufacturing manager at Ampex, is said to have recorded the voice for tapes. I've never seen one of these tapes, but it may be the tape that's referenced in the 1949 Ampex manuals. The 1952 manuals for the Model 300 mentioned the number 4494 standard alignment tape, which is probably a familiar most of you old tape recorder folks. It's a quarter inch width, 15 inch per second. This was packaged in a 4 or 5 inch gray round metal can that had the voice of Ross Snyder, an Ampex engineer and product manager. The 1952 December Ampex price list has this for $11. A new voice track was recorded for Ampex by Bob Morrison, who was an audio engineer there, around 1960. The package was also changed from metal can to a rectangular cardboard box. The part numbers were changed to 01-31321-01 for the quarter inch, 7.5 inch per second tape. I have a sample of this dated 1961. When Morrison left Ampex to found Standard Tape Lab around 1968, the voice tape was again newly recorded, this time by Tony Bardakis, who worked in the Ampex Standard Tape Lab at the time, and who was later to go on to found Magnetic Reference Lab in 1962 and record our voice track. The last MRL voice tape was recorded by a gentleman named Tim Enos, who's a professional voice talent, in 1990. And that's my little summary of Standard Alignment Tape.